use the word manifesto today, and our understanding may, at the least, verge on bad. Think of what the news calls manifestos, the self-congratulatory jerk-off documents from school shooters and women killers. Or think of what right-wingers call manifestos, the evil of Karl Marx. Or think of what companies call manifestos. Brands get to play with a sort of faux rebellion by using the term to sell shit we don't need. Corporations co-opt the idea, naming their branding guidelines and value statements manifestos to seem edgy and real and definitely not exploiting their workers. But real manifestos, these are deeply revolutionary, deeply anti-capitalist, deeply feminist and intersectional. And these are the manifestos we're going to focus on today. Manifestos used to be a tool of those in power. Starting in the late 1700s, kings and church leaders and the military issued manifestos as a sort of press release. The goal was to communicate the will of those in power. But perhaps because of this, the rebellious sort started using manifestos to defy those in power. More and more, the manifesto became a document of revolution. And in 1848, the Communist Manifesto demonstrated this new turn, advocating for an entire upending of the way society works. After that, in the 1900s, manifestos became increasingly wild and crazy, urgent, raw and ragged, pissed off, desperate, hopeful, all in one heady mix of text. And some of them are just as relevant today as they were then. Now, simply put, manifestos can be statements of beliefs and intentions. They can be serious or deeply satirical and silly. They can be long proclamations, short declarations. No matter the form or the length, manifestos are screams into the sky. They're a collective voice of millions, or a tiny but terrible voice of a few. They're claims to power by those who are powerless. They are a form of art used to demand change. Most of the time, manifestos can seem completely unreasonable, completely unrealistic. They have no patience for taking things slow, for moderation, for incremental change. They don't give a fuck about being respectable or earning some kind of attention. Fuck that, the manifestos say. We're loud, we're proud, and we want change now. As a result, manifestos are a unique reading experience, especially when they're made by women, queer folks, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and other groups often locked out of power. And many, many times, most times, manifestos are analog. They're newsprint, they're flyers, they're wheat-pasted posters, they're zines, they're physical art of the kind that we see less and less, which makes them so much more powerful and special in our digital age. So today, we're focusing on these kinds of manifestos. In this episode, you'll hear five different manifestos from across time and missions. First up, the short manifesto from 1992 called "I Want a President." It comes from Zoe Leonard, an artist, photographer, sculptor, and queer leader. Fair warning, there's some appropriation of homophobic slurs. I want a dyke for president. I want a person with AIDS for president. And I want a fag for vice president. And I want someone with no health insurance. And I want someone who grew up in a place where the earth is so saturated with toxic waste that they didn't have a choice about getting leukemia. I want a president that had an abortion at 16. And I want a candidate who isn't the lesser of two evils. And I want a president who lost their last lover to AIDS, who still sees that in their eyes every time they lay down to rest, who held their lover in their arms and knew they were dying. I want a president with no air conditioning. A president who has stood in line at the clinic, at the DMV, at the welfare office, and has been unemployed and laid off and sexually harassed and gay-bashed and deported. I want someone who has spent the night in the tombs and had a cross burned on their lawn and survived rape. I want someone who has been in love and been hurt, who respects sex, who has made mistakes and learned from them. I want a black woman for president. I want someone with bad teeth, someone who has eaten hospital food, someone who cross-dresses and has done drugs and been in therapy. I want someone who has committed civil disobedience. And I want to know why this isn't possible. I want to know why we started learning somewhere down the line that a president is always a clown, always a John and never a hooker, always a boss and never a worker, always a liar, always a thief, and never caught. Next up, a manifesto from 1973 called The Fat Liberation Manifesto. It comes from Judy Freespirit, an activist for lesbian rights, fat acceptance, disability rights, and incest survival, along with Aldebaran, a founder of the Fat Underground. The Fat Underground said that the majority of fat individuals could not cure themselves through dieting, because being fat was just another body type, like height and shoe size. The group gave lectures, protested diet clinics, and spread this manifesto. Number one, we believe that fat people are fully entitled to human respect and recognition. Number two, we are angry at mistreatment by commercial and sexist interests. These have exploited our bodies as objects of ridicule, thereby creating an immensely profitable market selling the false promise of avoidance of or relief from that ridicule. Number three, we see our struggle as allied with the struggles of other oppressed groups against classism, racism, sexism, ageism, financial exploitation, imperialism, and the like. Number four, we demand equal rights for fat people in all aspects of life, as promised in the Constitution of the United States. We demand equal access to goods and services in the public domain and an end to discrimination against us in the areas of employment, education, public facilities, and health services. Number five, we single out as our special enemies the so-called reducing industries. These include diet clubs, reducing salons, fat farms, diet doctors, diet books, diet foods and food supplements, surgical procedures, appetite suppressants, drugs and gadgetry, such as wraps and reducing machines. We demand that they take responsibility for their false claims, acknowledge that their products are harmful to the public health, and publish long-term studies proving any statistical efficacy of their products. We make this demand knowing that over 99% of all weight loss programs, when evaluated over a 5-year period, fail utterly, and also knowing the extreme proven harmfulness of frequent large changes in weight. Number 6, we repudiate the mystified science, which falsely claims that we are unfit. It has both caused and upheld discrimination against us, in collusion with the financial interests of insurance companies, the fashion and garment industries, reducing industries, the food and drug industries, and the medical and psychiatric establishment. Number 7. We refuse to be subjugated to the interests of our enemies. We fully intend to reclaim power over our bodies and our lives. We commit ourselves to pursue these goals together. Fat people of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose. Next, a manifesto from 1994 from the women of the Zapatistas. As you'll recall from our episode on the meeting between the Zapatistas and a group of Chicana artists from LA, this army took over parts of Mexico in 1994 to protect indigenous peoples. Women were an important part of the movement. Here's the Zapatista women's revolutionary laws. In their just fight for the liberation of our people, the EZLN incorporates women in the revolutionary struggle, regardless of their race, creed, color, or political affiliation, requiring only that they meet the demands of the exploited people and that they commit to the laws and regulations of the revolution, as well as taking account of the situation of the woman worker in Mexico. The revolution incorporates their just demands of equality and justice in the following women's revolutionary laws. First, women, regardless of their race, creed, color, or political affiliation, have the right to participate in the revolutionary struggle in any way that their desire and capacity determine. Second, women have the right to work and receive a just salary. Third, women have the right to decide the number of children they have and care for. Fourth, women have the right to participate in the matters of the community. Fifth, women and their children have the right to primary attention in their health and nutrition. Sixth, women have the right to education. Seventh, women have the right to choose their partner and are not obligated to enter into marriage. Eighth, women have the right to be free of violence from both relatives and strangers. Rape and attempted rape will be severely punished. Ninth, women will be able to occupy positions of leadership in the organization and hold military ranks in the Revolutionary Armed Forces. 10th, women will have all the rights and obligations which the revolutionary laws and regulations give. Next, another manifesto we've referenced in this show, the Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell, or WITCH, brought together radical women to scare the shit out of mainstream society in 1968. Here's the full manifesto from this group. WITCH is an all-woman everything. It's theater, revolution, magic, terror, joy, garlic flowers, spells. It's an awareness that witches and gypsies were the original guerrillas and resistance fighters against oppression, particularly the oppression of women, down through the ages. Witches have always been women who dared to be groovy, courageous, aggressive, intelligent, nonconformist, explorative, curious, independent, sexually liberated, revolutionary. This possibly explains why 9 million of them have been burned. Witches were the first friendly heads and dealers, the first birth control practitioner and abortionists, the first alchemists. Turn dross into gold and you devalue the whole idea of money. They bowed to no man, being the living remnants of the oldest culture of all, one in which men and women were equal sharers in a truly cooperative society, before the death-dealing, sexual, economic, and spiritual repression of the imperialist phallic society took over and began to destroy nature and human society. Witch lives and laughs in every woman. She is the free part of each of us, beneath the shy smiles, the acquiescence to absurd male domination, the makeup or flesh-suffocating clothing our sick society demands. There is no joining witch. If you are a woman and dare to look within yourself, you are a witch. You make your own rules. You are free and beautiful. You can be invisible or evident in how you choose to make your witch self known. You can form your own coven of sister witches. 13 is a cozy number for a group, and do your own actions. Whatever is repressive, solely male-oriented, greedy, puritanical, authoritarian, those are your targets. Your weapons are theater, satire, explosions, magic, herbs, music, costumes, cameras, masks, chants, stickers, stencils, and paint, films, tambourines, bricks, brooms, guns, voodoo dolls, cats, candles, bells, chalk, nail clippings, hand grenades, poison rings, fuses, tape recorders, incense, your own boundless imagination. Your power comes from your own self as a woman, and it is activated by working in concert with your sisters. The power of the coven is more than the sum of its individual members, because it is together. You are pledged to free our brothers from oppression and stereotyped sexual roles, whether they like it or not, as well as ourselves. You are a witch by saying aloud, "I am a witch," 3 times, and thinking about that. You are a witch by being female, untamed, angry, joyous, and immortal. Finally, one more tiny manifesto. This comes from the Bread and Puppet Theater in 1984, and it's titled Why Cheap Art? We'll talk more about this theater group in a future episode. Here's a manifesto that exemplifies everything we're talking about in this show. People have been thinking too long that art is a privilege of the museums and the rich. Art is not business. It does not belong to banks and fancy investors. Art is food. You can't eat it, but it feeds you. Art has to be cheap and available to everybody. It needs to be everywhere because it is the inside of the world. Art soothes pain. Art wakes up sleepers. Art fights against war and stupidity. Art sings hallelujah. Art is for kitchens. Art is like good bread. Art is like green trees. Art is like white clouds and blue sky. Art is cheap. Hurrah! The Art of Resistance is a podcast for the artists, the lovers of art, and people who want to resist, but don't know how. These stories are designed to help us find inspiration from the past and empower us all to find some hope for today and tomorrow. I'm Amy Lee Lillard, and I wrote, narrated, and produced this show. And there's so much more to this story. At artofresistance.space, you'll find sources, images, and videos for this episode and all the others. Here's an easy way to learn more about Art as Resistance. Sign up for the free newsletter at artofresistance.space and get stories and tips every week. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.